obviously this is a playoff, so I'm not going to start saying too much about our strategies and stuff like that. I'm sure you guys understand that. We've done our homework, and we feel we have a lot of key points to our preparation. But
I wouldn't want my game plan to rely on, well, maybe we don't have to be as good as we would normally be because Henrik will be bad. He always is bad when he plays us. You know, this may be the time that Henrik figured out what it takes to beat the Montreal Canadiens, or maybe what we saw before was just an anomaly.
And welcome back. It is hour number 3, Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. We are at Fan Jam at the corner of Peel and St. Jacques. I do believe I see some water falling from the sky, but it's only temporary, right? Rod's our insider when it comes to weather.
Indeed I am, as connected as Bob McKenzie, and I can tell you it was raining a little bit, but it'll go away.
And it's packed here, and our thanks to Gord Miller and Ray Ferraro, who are working the series for NBC, for spending a half an hour, and we'll be talking to them through the course of the series. And the million-dollar man, Ted DiBiase, was with us between 3:30 and 4. He's at Comedy Works tonight at 8 o'clock, along with Rod and Mitch Gallo, John Collett on site, Dave Trentadue back at the station. Coming up, he is in his old hockey home of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for the Penguins and the Blue Jackets. Here's Pierre.
Hockey insider Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub, with 6 locations in and around Montreal. YeOldOrchard.com.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How you doing?
Excellent. Live and in color from Suite 66, Mr. Lemieux's private enclave, just by the Penguins hallway.
All right. Appreciate the history and just the feel and the, this is it, Pierre, right? This is it. It's playoff time.
One,
here we
it's
go.
It's the first night of 2 months. That's how I look at it. And it's going to be tremendous because the matchups around the league in the first round are really good. You'd be hard-pressed to be able to say there's a favorite here or a favorite there and say, oh, yeah, there's going to be a sweep here or a sweep there. I don't think that's happening around the league. You know, some people are concerned about different injury situations around the league, but I think by and large, this is going to be a celebration of youth. It's going to be a celebration of skill, and it's going to be intense beyond belief just because of the parity that's in the league right now, Mitch.
It always is in the first round. And so let's pick up where Claude Julien left off. Pierre, if he would be willing to share some of those thoughts with us about how he's prepared and what he won't reveal. If he would reveal how he's preparing his team and has prepared his team for the Rangers, what do you suppose he'd discuss?
He'd talk to you about how they plan on beating Henrik Lundqvist. He'd talk to you about how they plan on manufacturing offense and exposing a Ranger defense that has not been particularly good the last 30 games of the year. He'd talk to you about how they're going to try to stabilize Chris Kreider so that he can't get to the net. And I think more than anything else, he'd talk to you about ways he'd try to create counterattack opportunities through the neutral zone against a very quick Ranger team. Those would probably be the major points, as I think of it, you know, with short service here without a rehearsal. That's probably what, if I were involved with his staff, those would be the things I'd be looking at, and I'm sure he's probably looking at a lot of the same things.
And before I forget, John Collett here just handed me something about what coaches are going to have access to beginning tonight across the National Hockey League. In arena
well, the iPads
coaching
you're
systems.
Talking about, the iPads on the bench?
That's right. 3 Apple iPad Pros will be positioned in a black holder on the glass behind or on the side of the team benches. They will be visible on camera, and coaches will probably be seen using these iPads on the benches during the games. So you don't have to, you're not going to be seeing these coaches pull out their white
personal
pads.
Tablets. Yeah.
So do you think that there was a sponsorship agreement signed?
Well, you tell me.
Well, I would have to think if a press release went out on that, based on what we've been seeing the entire season, I have to think that there's been some sponsorship stuff exchanging.
Yeah, that's just a little bit of camera time, huh?
What's that?
Just a little bit of camera time.
Yeah, exactly.
With the Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo, Pierre Maguire on site in Pittsburgh, we'll get to the Columbus Blue Jackets-Penguins series after we discuss the Habs and Rangers a little bit more.
Henrik Lundqvist talked about his record up here so much, Pierre. He's got a 7-game personal losing streak at the Bell Center. I mean, we've discussed it. But for a veteran player, is there any way to take what's happened and to channel it into some kind of, whether it's anger, whether it's determination, so that it doesn't become even more of an issue than it may already be?
I don't think he's any good when he plays angry. I think he's really good when he plays focused and determined. There's a big difference. I've watched him play in the Swedish final for Frölunda against Färjestad back in 2005, watched him in the World Championships in 2005, watched him in the Olympic gold medal game in 2006, watched him in the Stanley Cup run in 2013. There's so many things that you can look at with him, but playing mad is not one way that he's better. Playing determined and focused is where he's really good. And he's one guy, I'm with Bob McKenzie on this totally. If people think that the advantage is that he hasn't won there yet, you're making a big mistake. You're really not evaluating the situation properly. Because this is a guy that's got comeback ability beyond belief. He really does.
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, there have been some good moments for Henrik Lundqvist at the Bell Center. They won that series a couple of years ago, even though he was yanked in Game 5.
He won 2 games here.
He did. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, since that series last spring against Pittsburgh, Pierre, and you've seen a lot more of him up close than we have, he's not the same guy. He is not as dominant for whatever reason. That's not to say he can't be, but he hasn't been.
No, I agree with that. No. We talked about this yesterday and even last week. I totally concur. The big thing, though, and I would say this about the Rangers, their defensive zone coverage hasn't been as good either. It's been a big problem. And I know people don't want to talk about that, but it's a fact. It's just the hard reality fact is that the Rangers have had a really solid year, but they have not been very good defensively. And I think that that's something that has to be better for them if they're going to be able to play against a very quick and very determined Canadiens team.
And in years past, Lundqvist is there. This year, he hasn't been, to cover up a lot of those mistakes. But again,
the blemishes have not been covered up as well. I would agree with that. But you'll see, Rangers are one of the few teams in the league that really identify their man coverage from the red line in. And that's how they play. And when Allan first came over from Vancouver, it took a while for them to actually get used to that as a team. They're used to it now. But if you look at it, some of their players, for instance, I'll use Dan Girardi. Dan's been hurt a good portion of this season. And when he came back and played, he was basically playing on one leg. You can see he's not as quick to the point of attack. Ryan McDonough's had a fantastic year for them. Mark Stahl's been in between. Kevin Klein's been hurt, but he's been in between as well. You look at the guys that are supposed to be the game changers and the difference makers for them. Nick Holden, it could be argued that Nick Holden, from start of the year to the finish of the year, outside of Ryan McDonough, has been their most consistent defenseman. And again, I think that's where, if the Canes are going to take advantage of anything the Rangers present, it won't be Henrik Lundqvist. It's going to be the Rangers' in-zone coverage.
Yeah. And Kevin Klein can't even get his job back. Mitch Gallo.
Pierre, we've been making a big deal about the matchup between the Canadiens and the Rangers, but last year what happened to the Rangers in the playoffs in that series with the Penguins, the Rangers go 1-for-16 on the power play. They let up 7 goals while shorthanded on 17 attempts. I'm just wondering, do you think the Rangers learned anything from last year's series against the Penguins, or do you think the Canadiens can take something that the Penguins did specifically on special teams and apply it for this series?
Well, I think it's a great question and a really solid point, Mitch Gallo. I just don't know if they'll be able to do that. The Rangers are a bit different there, too. So I think last year was last year. The one thing I would tell you that's really improved for the Rangers this year has been the play of Kevin Hayes and the play of JT Miller. Those are two important players in the power play. And Zuccarello is a different player. So last year is last year. Those three players are completely different than they were a year ago, and I think that helps the Rangers. And McDonough's a lot better than he was a year ago, too, because he was dealing with tons of injury situations last year. So I think to use last year, maybe you can find a little bit of something, but I would say it's probably a reach.
You know what the Canadiens could do from last year? Is find Crosby and Malkin and Kessel and put them on the power play here.
The guys that were really good shorthanded were Bonino and Matty Cullen. Brian Rust and Carl Hagelin. Those are the guys that were really, really good in the shorthand situation for the Penguins.
I don't want to dwell on it because it's been done to death, and it will continue to be done to death until this series is over, the whole Kreider-Price thing. But from Carey Price's perspective, and maybe we'll get a little bit more when Mark Denis joins us after 5:30, it's not so much that it was Chris Kreider that knocked him out. It's that that moment with Chris Kreider put an end to the kind of season that was very, very special for Carey Price. And we'll never know if the series would have turned out differently had he remained healthy. We just don't know the answer to that. We can all guess, but we don't know. Do you think the fact that he's now got the opportunity to replay it over against the same team, against many of the same characters, the same coaching staff on the other side, same head coach, that that's part of what is driving him?
It could be. I mean, I think the Stanley Cup drives you more than personal vendetta. You know, he's won the World Junior. He's won the Olympic gold. He was a magical player for Canada, which was a very good team in 2014 in Sochi. So he's accomplished a lot of really cool things, but he hadn't won the Stanley Cup. So if I'm him, I'm not really worried about personal vendetta. I'm worried about winning the Cup. And there are a lot of people who think the Canadiens have a realistic chance to compete for the Cup. There are a lot of people around the league, including hockey professionals, coaches that do this for a living, who think Montreal, if they can get by this round, have a real legitimate chance to win the Cup.
I noticed on the TSN prediction preview show last night, the consensus Eastern Conference finalists were Montreal and Washington, which means Carey Price is going to be a huge story if that happens, because it's certainly not going to be down the middle of the ice.
I would agree. Yeah. I would agree.
One of the things that I pointed out with you several times this year, Pierre, is how dominant the Canadiens were during the third period all season long. And ironically, so Montreal's got a plus 23, the third best ratio in the third period. New York, a plus 25, second best ratio over the third period. Is this something that you think will continue? We saw it over 80 games. Will it continue for both teams during the playoffs?
It could very well. It's hard to really predict because you never know what the penalties are going to be. You never know injury situations, but it's a trend that probably will remain. The one trend that I would tell you that has probably more relevance than that is the road record of the New York Rangers. I really think, and I've talked to you guys about it for the last few days, I think that's something that is not getting enough attention, and they're very comfortable, and if they go in and win game one, not to put more pressure on the Canadiens or their fan base, but if Rangers go in there and win game one, that can be a problem. That could be a huge problem.
You were telling us since the beginning of the season how the Canadiens, it was important that they manage Shea Weber's minutes and that he was burnt out in that series last year against the Ducks with the Predators. Now that the regular season is done, Pierre, with Shea Weber, how far do you think they could extend him? How far can they push him?
25 to 30 minutes a game, because there's no back-to-backs in this one and they're days off. So that's a positive, and there's no time zone travel like the Nashville-Anaheim series was last year. But he had nothing left to give. He would probably be the first person to tell you he had nothing left in the Anaheim series. They did game seven, and he gave everything he had. They won the series, but I'm just telling you, there was nothing left after that. There was nothing. And I respect him so much for how hard he competes.
Yeah, you can't help but think that, you know, I'm sure there was a legitimate injury. I don't know about the seriousness of it. A lot of us suspect that he played a good chunk of the series with something, a series. But yeah, this was also a case of resting him for this.
No question. I totally agree. And I listen, you won't find a bigger fan outside of his family of Shea Weber than I am. Again, you go back a long way with these players. But he is now ready, I think, unless there's an injury behind the scenes we're not aware of. He's ready to play 25 to 30 minutes a game. It should not be an issue.
Okay, along the same lines, what about Markov? Like, they were careful with him. He averaged under 22. Do you think we'll go back to the usage of Markov from a couple years ago when he was the most important player in this team or one of them?
It depends on the matchup they try to create. You're going to know that probably by the middle of the second period. You'll see what the Rangers are doing with Stepan and Kreider. And you'll see potentially what they're going to do with Zibanejad or what they're going to do with Kevin Hayes. It's going to be interesting to see how the Rangers play this with their top three center icemen and who the wingers are and who the Canadiens choose to match up on. That's going to be the thing to watch in terms of matchups and ice time and how it's handed out in game one.
Well, Pierre, you know these coaches know each other very well. Claude Julien beat Alain Vigneault for the Cup in 2011. It's Weber on Kreider, and I don't say that at all with any reference to any potential injury. Kreider is their top left winger. Shea Weber is their Montreal's top defenseman.
Well, I'm just not because I'm sitting in Mario's suite right now, but I remember in 92, and it's a long time ago, but I'm just going to tell you, the Rangers tried to do that. Roger Nielsen and Colin Campbell and Wayne Cashman, that was a coaching staff that we faced, Scotty and I and Rick Keel, and they tried to do that on Kevin Stevens and Mariel, and they put Bookaboom on the ice every time Kevin Stevens was on the ice. And Kevin was fast and big, just like Kreider, fast and big, and by the middle part of the series, Book had nothing left to give. Just telling you. So I don't know if that's the perfect matchup. It might be early on, but you may have to change out of that. Because when those big guys have to continually turn and go and match up against speed that's better than theirs, it breaks guys down. I'm just telling you
yep.
right now.
No,
you've got to be really careful.
Certainly
on that.
Something
really
to think
careful.
About. Yeah, you know, Jeff Petrie is a skater as a right.
That's what I'm talking
right-handed
about.
Defensive.
It almost reminds me of when Philadelphia had the Legion of Doom line, and Scotty Bowman came in there with his Detroit Red Wing team, and everybody said, "Oh, they're going to play Konstantinov and Fetisov against him because they want the sledgehammer approach," and Scotty went with Larry Murphy and Nick Lidstrom because they were smarter.
How?
You know, so you got to be really aware. You got to be really, really aware of how you do it. I did it. I mean, I did it in the Stanley Cup final, so I kind of get how it works. And it's a lot of mental, mathematical work, and it's also evaluating situations. So for everybody to say, oh, yeah, they're going to play Weber against Kreider the whole series, I don't know about that. I don't know if I'd do that. Depends on the type of minutes that Shea's getting.
All right, so from both coaches' perspectives, how hard and fast do they attempt to be in regards to the matchup game?
I think it's going to be more about defensemen versus forwards than forwards versus forward. Alain doesn't really change on the fly a lot to get that. And Bookaboom, ironically enough, is working for the New York Rangers now and changing their defense because all Samuelson left to go down and coach Carolina's farm team. So it'll be interesting to see the pressure that's on Jeff to coach the defense there. And obviously on the other side is J.J. Daniel. So I would put more scrutiny on the guys changing the defense in this series than I would the head coaches changing the forwards.
You want to give us a scouting report on the referees tonight, Pierre? You got to Ian Walsh and Dan O'Halloran in Montreal.
Danny is really good. Danny's solid. You know what you're going to get. He lets you play physical the entire game. The only thing he doesn't like is he doesn't like cross checks up high. He's not a big fan of the slashes.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I got to stop you there. Tell me an NHL referee that likes that high cross check that won't come.
I know guys who let it go all the time. I'm not going to tell you their names. But
well,
I know
the guy working, whoever worked that Austin Matthews game against, what was that? Like, there were 8 cross checks there.
Yeah, that was.
Forget who the referee was, but who was it against?
Let that go. O'Halloran won't.
Yeah.
And Ian Walsh is a good skater. He won't be overmatched by the moment. I think the biggest thing is him sometimes, not always, sometimes he'll call slot area violations. So that's the one thing. If I were refereeing, I would, or if I were coaching in the series, in this game anyways, I'd be paying attention to that and reminding my players, just be careful what you do in the slot, because he's a nitpicker on slot area violations.
Explain, I have the utmost respect for Ken Hitchcock. Please explain Jim Neal hiring him to replace Lindy Ruff in Dallas.
I think they wanted to get somebody that's had success, somebody that could cut a wide swath through their dressing room, somebody that wasn't going to get pushed around, somebody that's had a ton of success there and could probably sell some season tickets for them because of the 99 Cup. There's a lot that I think brings Ken Hitchcock into favor with Jimmy Neal. They're both Western guys. They're both from Alberta. I think there's a lot there. I think there's a lot of connection there. So Ken's a winner. And I told you, I wouldn't be surprised if he was back in the league, and obviously didn't take long for him to get back.
Jim Neal better get him a goalie. Right? Jim Neal better get him a goalie.
Well, it's funny. I was just talking to Rick Tockett about that, and I was just talking to David Morehouse, the president of the Pittsburgh Penguins, about that just before I came on with you. So, he better get a goalie.
Right. Is that goalie perhaps in Pittsburgh right now?
League. Trust me, he's a very good coach.
Is that goalie perhaps in Pittsburgh right now?
Well, I don't know. It depends on what George McPhee wants to do. because you got to think that Marc-Andre Fleury is going to be exposed unless a deal happens between Dallas and Pittsburgh on that, which would be interesting to see.
All right.
But so I can't. Right now, I got to tell you, Mitch, I'm not even focusing on the Dallas Stars. They're not in the playoffs.
No, I know, but that's Ken Hitchcock was
named. That are in.
So let's finish up with Columbus and Pittsburgh.
Well, this one's going to be nasty, I think, tonight. I don't know about the rest of the series. It'll be interesting to see how it goes down. But I just finished interviewing Dubinsky. That'll run on the pregame show. He's got the eye of the tiger going. This is the third time he's played head-to-head against Crosby in the playoffs. That's the matchup that'll be established early. Penguins have Malkin back in the lineup. Matt Murray's going to start. If Columbus is going to win this series, Bobrovsky's going to have to be the best player on the ice for the Blue Jackets. I really think it's going to be a test of whether Sergei Bobrovsky can bring to the playoffs what he had during the regular season.
All right, here we go. Thanks as always, Pierre. We'll be watching when we can, and it's the Habs and Rangers tonight. We'll take you there to Sean Campbell, by the way, Pierre, our Bell Media Employee of the Month. How about that?
Congratulations, Sean. That's fantastic. That's a great company to represent and work for when you're the Employee of the Month. That's huge. Huge stuff.
Talk to you tomorrow. Thanks.
From Chicago. See you later.
All right.